y'all. Thanks for listening to Killer Queens.
Or KQ if you're nasty.
Welcome to the show where two 90s loving country chicks gab about true crime and tell each other to talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I'm Torella.
And I'm Tori.
And we're sisters who have always loved true crime and decided to turn that obsession into a show with a light take on the topic.
Kind of like diet true crime, it's all the flavor and fewer calories.
Now with our show, you'll get true crime, 90s nostalgia, and a few four-letter words sprinkled in.
Because I always say that Polly Pockets and true crime go together like peas and carrots.
Be sure to check out our case submission form on our website at killerqueenspodcast.com and follow us on social media and YouTube.
Now grab your Surge, your 3D Cool Ranch Doritos, and your kitten surprise, and let's get into the episode.
This episode contains discussion of murder by poison, dismemberment, cannibalism, sexual assault of women and children, this is a brief mention, and mental illness, specifically schizophrenia, also mentions of granny rippers. Listener discretion is advised.
Tamara Samsonova, dubbed the Granny Ripper, was caught in 2015 after being seen on CCTV footage making 7 trips out of her apartment with plastic bags and a saucepan containing the dismembered body parts of her roommate, Valentina Ulanova. Samsonova admitted to killing Valentina as well as 3 other people right away. However, her victim count was much higher than just 4.
Hey, you guys, welcome to Killer Queens. If you've never been here before, we want to give you just a little information about how the show is set up and what it's meant to accomplish. If you have been here before, welcome back. You can just use that handy skip ahead feature here if you want to.
We want to give a message to friends and family of the victims. We know that there may be someone involved in the case who might listen one day, and we want you to know that our intention is to only bring awareness to this case. And while we do use personal stories in some instances and our own humor in order to tell the story in a way that listeners can relate, we have the utmost respect for victims and their families.
We created Killer Queens to be a place where we can have open discussions about cases just like you would with friends. We are not investigators. We use information that is available to the public, such as documentaries, case files, and media coverage. Using this information, we intend to tell the story of what happened in each case that we cover. Now, will you agree with our interpretations or conclusions of each case? Well, heck no.
Mm-mm. We each approach cases from different perspectives, life experiences, and beliefs that we already have in place. And sometimes these differences are slight, yet they can be wide enough to cause divide and upset some of those listening. We do our best to present the facts as we find them in our research, but we do bring our own perspectives to the case. We understand that you will too. We want you to know that this is a safe space to discuss differences and opinions in a civilized manner. Our style may not be your personal preference, and if that's the case, we know you'll be able to find one of the many other shows out there to tell the story the way you want to hear it. We can be grown-ups about it if you can.
Now, if we are your cup of tea and you want even more KQ, you can join our Patreon and get access to our entire catalog of episodes ad-free and access to bonus episodes too. And I'll give you just a little hint if you're an ad skipper, but you still want the deals that we have from our sponsors each week, you can scroll down to the show notes and see what coupons we have available for you right down there.
But you didn't hear from us.
That's a pro tip, but I'll deny ever sharing it.
Right. So all that being said, let's get into the story.
All right. Well, now we've done Dorothea Puente, who is kind of a granny ripper. She was older, but nobody's been called a granny ripper before. So this is just a less likely demographic for serial killers.
I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah. We do want to start with some thank yous, though, because we're not monsters.
Yes. Well.
Well.
Sometimes you are.
Okay, fine. This was requested by Josie Taylor and Beth Satterstrom. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. And another extra thank you to Beth Satterstrom for writing it with the assistance of our lovely sweet baby angel, Mark.
Thank you, guys. We just have the best team. Like, everybody just jumps in and helps and gets it all just fantastic. We love you guys. All right. So before we jump into the Granny Ripper, we're going to visit the country she calls home, which is Russia.
Mother Russia.
Russia is often viewed or portrayed as a rough and tumble country full of hardworking people doing what they need to in order to survive and make ends meet. It is the 9th largest country in the world by population, having just under 146 million citizens. To put that in perspective, the US is third with around 330 million. India is second with 1.38 billion. And China is largest with just under 1.44 billion. Ooh. Jeesh.
Mm-hmm.
When we take a look at the largest by land mass, though, Russia's the largest by like a lot, with just over 17 million square kilometers. We in Tennessee don't believe in kilometers, but I understand others do.
Sure.
The second next country is Canada with just under 9.9 million square kilometers, and then the U.S. with 9.8 million square kilometers.
Okay. Right.
But that's huge. 17 million versus our 9.8.
Measly 9.8. Yeah.
Yeah. The majority of Russia's population, almost 70%, lives in what is called the European part of the country, which is basically just the western areas with pockets here and there near the southern border. The remaining 30% live scattered throughout the country. There are like vast, vast areas of the country that are uninhabited or uninhabitable due to the harsh winters and permafrost that has built up.
I feel like you just maybe learned the term or the word vast because you used it a lot.
Well, I have the V encyclopedia. Thank you very much. I learned about vast right before Vesuvius, and that is a... Now, that's a violent igneous rock formation. What did he say?
Something like that, I swear. Yeah, you nailed it.
There was definitely a V.
What do you know about vulcanized rubber?
Oh, let's talk about it. Yeah, let's talk about it. That's a friend's quote, by the way. So, so in these areas, you can grow. You cannot grow. Excuse me. In this vast area... The vast area.
In all of its vastness.
With permafrost, vast permafrost. You can't grow the crops, okay?
Mm-mm.
So why would you live there?
You wouldn't.
You wouldn't. You just wouldn't. Some estimates say that roughly 20% of Russia's landmass is inhabited by its citizens, leaving up to 80% as just empty areas. Wow. So now that you know a little bit about the surrounding areas, now we're going to come back to Tamara Samsonova. How did you say it? How are we going to say it?
Tamara Samsonova.
Okay.
Yeah.
I heard it pronounced a couple different ways. So there you have it. If that's wrong, you know, sorry. It's not.
Tamara.
Yeah.
But I like Tamara.
I like
so.
Tamara too. Yeah. Tamara Samsonova was born on February 5th, 1947 in Ozhur, Russia. If you do any type of research into the Granny Ripper, you're probably going to see two dates for her birthday. You'll see February 5th as well as April 25th, 1947. The most cited date of birth that we could find was the February date of birth, so that's what we're going to go with. But for those of you who are going to fact check our asses and tell us we were wrong, we already know this, okay? Not getting this there, are you?
Don't.
After high school, she attended the Moscow State Linguistic University. And after university, she moved to St. Petersburg, where she worked for a travel agency until she ended up getting a job at the Grand Hotel Europe, where she worked for 16 years before retiring. While in St. Petersburg, she met a man named Alexei. The two married and moved into an apartment on Dimitrova Street? Dimitrova Street? Where they lived for 30 years together. It's one thing to read this stuff and to hear it, but then when I go to say it, my brain is like, wrong, you're wrong. So,
well, because we're, again, I know we say it a lot, but especially in cases where we're talking about, because, oh my gosh, if, and we'll get into this a little bit later too, but if you've heard our take on Andrei Chikatilo.
Ooh, yeah, that one was.
So we are two dummies. From Middle Tennessee. Like, we just, and it's, we try.
Contribute.
We're trying the best we can, but. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they lived there for about 30 years together. And in regards to like her early life or childhood, that's literally about all we know. There's really nothing up until that you'll find up until the point that she went to high school and all of that and university. It's fair to assume that this is probably due to poor record keeping throughout the years, compounded by the tumultuous history of Russia and the dissolution of the USSR.
Plus the vastness.
Well, the vastness. That's a lot of area to lose papers.
Yes.
You know? Vast. Yeah. While Moscow is the capital of Russia and has a population of around 13 million people, according to a 2021 census, St. Petersburg is the second largest with a population of around 5.6 million people. St. Petersburg is one of Russia's top tourist destinations and is typically a really safe city to visit. Official statistics show that crime in St. Petersburg is slowly decreasing, while the number of solved crimes is slowly rising. There were a total of 56,000 crimes registered by police in 2014. That stayed the same in 2015. It dropped in both 2016 and 2017.
Good for them.
Good for you, yeah. Russia. Wow. And murder is also on the decline in Russia, according to statistics. It will, except for Tamara.
Yeah.
She may be responsible for more of those statistics than we realize. After 30 years of being together, Alexei went missing in the early 2000s. Tamara reported him missing to the authorities and told police he ran off with another woman.
How many times have we heard that?
Exactly. And she seemed devastated. She seemed very upset about this. And the police didn't really have a reason not to believe her. There was nothing in the apartment. There wasn't like blood everywhere. There wasn't, you know, like, okay, maybe he just ran off with another woman. And she, again, she seemed like appropriately devastated. To this day, Alexei has still not been found. We still don't know where he went. After Alexei's alleged disappearance, Tamara, I almost said Tamara. That's hard because in the U.S., that's a Tamara right there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Tamara didn't want to live alone, so she decided to get a roommate. And it's reported that she went through several roommates rather quickly because she might be like slightly difficult to live with, one might say.
I think you're being quite kind to Tamara there. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about why she might be labeled difficult to live with?
Well, neighbors of Tamara said they would hear loud banging, yelling, and all sorts of loud noises coming from her apartment. An argument would occur, then the roommate would move out. So just kind of put a pin in that little area. But she would get into these knockdown, drag-out fights with all of her roommates all the time. One has to wonder, did Alexei just be like, fuck this?
I'm tired of your bullshit. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I think it's more likely that that's not what happened, but anyway.
Well.
Yeah.
So now we're going to fast forward to 2015. I'm going to attempt it.
Okay. That was it. Fast forward.
That's fast forwarding. In March of 2015, Tamara moved into Valentina Ulanova's apartment. Tamara had needed a place to stay while renovations were being done to her apartment, so an agreement was made that she would live with Valentina and help with chores around the apartment, as well as help to take care of Valentina. So Valentina was 79 years old when they moved in together, and she lived on the same street as Tamara. For several months, the two lived together and Tamara did the household chores and took care of Valentina. After several months of living together, Valentina and Tamara had an argument over unwashed dishes. Valentina told Tamara that she no longer wanted her to live in her apartment. Tamara had absolutely no intention of moving out. She was like, no, this is where I am.
No.
You're going to have to make me.
And this
but also
like,
you can't.
Yeah. This was like a giant fight over the dishes. Do you know what it kind of reminds me of? Do you remember that, was it in the movie, What We Do in the Shadows, where all the vampires got in a fight about doing the dishes? And like, it may have been in an episode, I can't remember, but they're like, one of them's like up in the corner of the ceiling. He's like, And like, I don't know, they're just like getting in this big fight about like, well, you didn't do the dishes. Well, it was your turn to do the dishes. And like, it was just funny because obviously they're like vampires and they're like 800 years old, but they're still fighting about the dishes. So
it's a very big roommate issue.
Exactly. If you ever had a roommate. It transcends all relationships, all types of roommate situations.
Yes, absolutely. So Tamara traveled to a nearby city, Pushkin, where she received, or she didn't receive, well, she did receive something, but she, yes, she started by convincing a pharmacist to sell her phenazepam, an over-the-counter prescription, but she did not have a prescription. She just convinced them to like, hey, can I have that? And they said, yes, you can.
How? What did she say that she was like, look, I know that normally a doctor needs to write this prescription, but not for me.
I know.
Okay.
And it worked.
Eva gave it to her.
Uh-huh. Phenazepam is a drug that was developed in Russia and used to treat neurological disorders such as insomnia and anxiety. And it is supposed to be only available via prescription and is typically found in powder form, in a solution in a dropper bottle or tablets. It has recently become more popular for illegal recreational use due to its euphoric effects. Some users have also reported that it helps to alleviate withdrawal symptoms, to temper cocaine highs, and augment the effects of alcohol. So Tamara returned to the apartment. She combined the drugs with an Olivier salad for Valentina. Now, I didn't know what Olivier salad was.
It sounds delicious.
But what it is, and thank you to Mark for helping us out with this, with the pronunciation for sure, but an Olivier salad is a traditional Russian dish made with peas, potatoes, carrots, onions, meat, pickles, and eggs, all mixed together with mayonnaise. And the meat is usually bologna, chicken, or ham.
I mean, it sounds great. It sounds like a potato salad.
It really does, mm-hmm, with a little extra. With
some other stuff in it. I'm digging that.
I'm thinking a chicken pot pie meets a potato salad.
Huh. Okay.
I like it. And I said, Mark helped with the pronunciation for sure. Beth might have helped with what is inside of this. But either way, I enjoy both of those. And I also would try the salad.
100%.
Minus the phenazepam.
Well, sure. Yeah. But the...
Take mine.
Do you remember those Suddenly pasta... I mean, they still sell them, but I don't eat them anymore because I'm not 21
years
old. Yes. But the Suddenly pasta salads... I fucking lived on that shit for like 5 entire years. And then when they had the audacity to raise the price of a box from $1.15 to like $3.35, I was like, what am I, fucking made of gold? Forget this. Like, whatever. But I really loved the one that was like the mayonnaise base. You would mix it with mayonnaise. And it was like ranch. It had obviously the pasta in it, but it had those little bits of like ham, like the cubed ham. And peas
exactly
in it. So it sounds very much like this, but just with potatoes instead of the pasta. That shit was delicious.
I would be 100% on board with this salad. Like, it sounds delicious to me.
We are now to the end of things that sound delicious.
Absolutely.
It's about and to I will take say, a turn.
Just a side note as well, in case you guys were wondering, if I'm going to have anything like this mayonnaise based, I'm going to need to take a Prilosec or a couple Tums before, because my old ass can't handle it. So after making the salad, Tamara presumably gave it to Valentina or told her, you can have it. I got it for you. And then Tamara goes to bed. Tamara wakes up around 2 a.m. on July 23rd, 2015, and found Valentina on the kitchen floor. She then began dismembering Valentina's body with a hacksaw and 2 knives. Valentina was reported as having still been breathing when Tamara began dismembering her.
That's horrific.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how do you... Any of this is awful, right? Like, how do you do any of this? But...
Yeah, bring it on. Come on. Yep.
You're okay with... It's almost like she didn't want to do the act of killing her or assumed that this would have killed her and then she would dismember her. But she knows that she's still alive while she's doing this. How is that something that you're like, well, I can deal with that, but you know what I mean? Like,
it's extra cruel because, and not that obviously we do not condone murder. I don't think that it is fair at all or good or right to say, you know what, if you have to kill somebody, but let's just say that like in this situation, I'm like, if you're gonna do it, you shouldn't. But if you're going to, why couldn't you have given her a more humane way instead of dismembering her while she's still breathing?
Yeah. Like,
and we don't know if she felt any pain, like if she was, because she's unconscious, right? Yeah. We don't know if she felt any pain while this was happening, but
I hope
regardless.
God, she was just so out of it that, yeah. Oh my gosh.
It is so cruel. Yes. Tamara then placed Valentina's head and hands in a saucepan and boiled them on the stove. She then wrapped the remaining body parts in pieces of a shower curtain and placed them in plastic bags. Then she took those plastic bags and dumped them near the pond in her neighborhood. The saucepan containing the head and hands has never been found. On July 27th, 2015, a couple from the neighborhood was walking their dog, and the dog started getting really interested in that pond. The dog found a plastic bag that it kept trying to get into, because dogs. The couple went to see what the fuss was about and discovered that the bag contained a headless and limbless torso. They contacted the police immediately, and the police come out and start to get to work.
Can you, like, like, we both walk our dogs. Like, the dogs will get interested in stuff. The
sure
worst,
they will,
obviously,
yeah.
that they've ever picked up for me is, like, a dead bird or a squirrel the other day that looked petrified, and it was disgusting. And, you know, they want to pick them up. They want to carry it with them. Like,
oh,
can you
yeah.
fucking imagine? Like, hey, what are you getting into over there? My God, and opening that up?
No. I think that would scar anyone for life, and maybe you rethink. I don't know.
Yeah, like you have PTSD just from walking your dogs.
Yes.
Jeez.
How terrible. And that's another point, right? Like, crimes, I don't care what kind of crime it is, but especially something like this, there's no victimless crime. Look at how many people have been affected by this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The police also got a report from someone who had witnessed Tamara carrying the bags out of her apartment the night of the murder. So, thank God for her being a dummy, because they're onto her, right? Another report came in from a social worker who had stopped by to see Valentina, but Tamara refused to let her into the apartment. During their investigation, the police took a head count of the people in the neighborhood and came to the realization that Valentina Ulanova was unaccounted for and no one had actually seen her in days. They went to the apartment that the two women shared, and Tamara had no problem letting the police inside. In fact, she was welcoming and kind. She answered their questions willingly. Once they were inside the apartment, the police found traces of blood in the kitchen and the bathroom. They confronted Tamara with the blood evidence and the fact that no one had seen Valentina in days, and she quickly admitted to the murder and dismemberment of Valentina and the murders of three other people. She was arrested on July 27th, 2015. Can you imagine just being like, hey, we just want to, you know, we just were wondering if you've seen Valentina. And she was like, I murdered four people.
Yeah.
Like, and dismembered them.
Oh, okay. Wasn't expecting that one.
No, and it just simply does not.
And also she's
happen.
Like, please do come in. Would you like something to drink? And they're like, hey, what's all that blood over there? She's like, fuck,
oh,
they got me.
Thank you for asking. I was going to tell you about that. So this is what... this is such a crazy, insane case.
Like, obviously, she knew they were going to see all that stuff.
You would think. I mean, she invited them in. Ugh. She was arrested on July 27, 2015. And as the investigation continued, the police found CCTV footage of Tamara making seven different trips from her apartment carrying the plastic bags, which they found out were body parts. They also saw her carrying out the saucepan containing the head and hands.
You can find the CCTV footage online. I don't know. Jen may drop it in. I'm not totally sure. Jen's our editor, by the way. She's fantastic.
Yes.
It's very like, oh my gosh. Because you know it. Oh, my gosh. You know what's in the saucepan.
I know.
Jeez.
I know. Yeah. Not at all that the rest of this is not disturbing as hell. But that little tidbit, I was like, oh, God, why? I also do want to make note of, because you brought up Jen, who we love. She also edits for The Casual Criminalist, who covered this case as well 2 years ago. So
yeah, check
it out. That's something to check out. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we love The Casual Criminalist. Yeah. Yes.
He's funny. As Hale.
Mm-hmm. That's the correct term for it. Like hard as Hale.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Do you see what I mean?
Okay.
Upon her arrest, Tamara told police about her argument with Valentina about the dishes. Basically, neither of them wanted to clean the dirty dishes. And we know what happens when somebody is like, I don't want to clean them. And you're like, well, I don't want to clean. I'm not going to clean them. And then what happens is dismemberment. That is classic.
Then you challenge. The next step is I challenge you to a duel.
Exactly.
Dishes, Tamara, dishes. But she didn't want to leave. I mean, that's the...
That was, yeah, exactly. She then told them, quote, I came home and put the whole pack of finazepam, 50 pills, into her Olivier salad. She liked it very much. I woke up after 2 a.m. and she was lying on the floor. So I started cutting her into pieces. It was very hard for me to carry her to the bathroom. She was fat and heavy. I did everything at the kitchen where she was lying.
Okay, Tamara, do we need to throw shade at her now?
Just, I mean, she, because Tamara's not no spring chicken. And I'm guessing that she wasn't in her peak physical condition. So to say that Valentina is, in her words, fat and heavy, that might not be accurate. Maybe you're just weak and old.
True.
Maybe we could go that route, but whatever.
Yeah.
The police searched the apartment and found Tamara's diary. And it is noted that it was among books about black magic and astrology, which, as we know, you can have books about black magic and astrology, and that's okay.
Yeah, if you're into satanic rituals.
Right. Yes. Okay, so you can have all those things, and you can not be a murderer or into satanic rituals, that kind of thing. But this paired with what we find out. So,
yeah.
She also had a diary. It was written in three languages, Russian, German, and English. And the diary contained many entries, including everyday things, but also confessions of several murders. One entry read, quote, I killed my tenant, Volodoya, cut him into pieces in the bathroom with a knife, put the pieces of his body in plastic bags, and threw them away in different parts of the Frizinski district. Another entry described how she dismembered the body of Sergei. Oh, no. Potanavin?
Yeah, I think so.
A 44-year-old man after an argument occurred. She also put his body parts in plastic bags and dumped them around the neighborhood. Traces of his blood were found in her bathroom, and the confessions were among entries about how she slept badly, how she skipped a meal, or took her medicine. There were songs and poems as well, and there was even an entry about Valentina, who she called Valya. And it said, I love Valya. There were also things written in the diary that suggested that Tamara ate her victims and had a penchant for gouging out their lungs and eating them.
Yikes.
I like a diary. I like to keep a diary sometimes. I don't keep it as regularly as I should, but you can find just some bullshit in mine. Like, today was really hot and I didn't do much. And then I decided to watch a movie. You know, like, it's what? And the fact that she mentions all these things so casually in betwixt.
Mm-hmm. She's like, I took my medicine at 9, murdered and dismembered my tenant at 10, took a nap around 12, went shopping at 4. Like,
yeah.
What the fuck?
I don't get it. And the fact that every time she, not every time, but it's common for her to be like, I murdered and dismembered Sergei after an argument that we had. It's like, you are the constant because you're arguing with everybody. So It was also noted that during the 2 decades that Tamara was just out there murdering people, she had been admitted to a psychiatric hospital 3 times, and it was believed that she had schizophrenia. Marina Krivinko, a neighbor of Tamara's for 15 years, spoke with the police. She said that Tamara was very interested in the serial killer Andrei Chikatilo, also known as the Rostov Ripper or the Butcher of Rostov. Chikatilo sexually assaulted, murdered, and mutilated 53 women and children from 1978 to 1990, and he was executed in 1994 by a bullet to the back of the head. Tamara reportedly studied him and took note of his methods, and Just a side note, I already mentioned this. We covered him and we did not do, we tried our best with the names. I'll just say that right now. But if you are interested in listening to those episodes, Sweet Little Baby Mark has included the episode numbers. It's 133 and 134. So.
Mm-hmm. And he's the one who dropped trowel in court, right? And pulled out his Cheeto in a bush.
Yes, his button on a fur coat. Yes.
Okay.
Teensy tiny genitalia.
The bowl.
The vol. I don't even know if that might be generous.
Okay. Yeah, it might. Yeah. It's
Cheeto with a bush.
Media was there. So it's out there.
And I'll tell you what, you can find it if you look for it. I don't know. You might need a magnifying glass, but you could find it. I don't know if you want to, though. I'll be honest. We've both seen it. I wish I could scrub my eyes.
It's no, what was that guy's name? Johnny Wadd.
Oh, yes.
Don't look at that one either. That's bad.
No.
That's bad. God, you can't unsee it.
Too many dicks. I don't need to. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So while they were going through the diary that they found, they discovered that there were also things written in it that suggested, like we said, that Tamara ate pieces of her victims or, you know, the lungs. While there was an absence of physical evidence to prove this, it's speculated that Valentina's lungs were in the cooking pot along with her head and hands. Also, Samsonova confirmed to the police that what they were reading was factual and had actually happened. In the pages of her diary, she stated that she would eat parts of the lungs, legs, and pieces of the heads of her victims before disposing of everything else.
Why?
In regards to cannibalism, we already mentioned Chikatilo, and everyone knows about Jeffrey Dahmer and Albert Fish. We covered Luca Magnotta in our Doc Jam series.
Girl, don't you dare. It's Luca Magnotta, and he had a bunch of trashes, so.
That's true. That's true. Fragile. That was one of the things, right? Yeah. So that's in Don't Fuck With Cats. And after he was arrested for murder, which he filmed and put online, police obtained another video of him partaking in the act of cannibalism. Then there's Armin. I forget how to say his last name.
Mivis.
Mivis, who we covered. But early, that might be in our back catalog.
Might be. It was very early.
Yeah, you can go to killerqueens.link/OG episodes to get those. They're free, but they're just older and sound quality not so great, whatever. But we covered that one too. That might have been like episode 5, 7, something like that. So he put out an ad on a now gone website, the Cannibal Cafe.
Yeah, the fact that that was a thing.
For a willing victim to cannibalize. And this victim came to his home where their night together was totally recorded. He gave the victim cough syrup and sleeping pills, which caused him to drift in and out of consciousness. His genitals were cut off and then consumed by both men. Mivis then stabbed him to death, consumed his flesh over the course of the next 10 months. He was arrested after he put up another ad looking for a victim. And he ended up being convicted of manslaughter and then at a retrial, murder. And he's currently serving a life sentence in prison. And I do believe that when we covered that episode, the police actually use him as like a consultant for like cannibalism cases and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, and I think with him, and I don't agree with, I think cannibalism is bad. I think murder, bad, all of these things bad. However, if I may, he got consent, you know?
Yeah, his particular, of course, this shouldn't have happened, but his particular victim wanted to be eaten.
Yes.
Which is... I've never heard of somebody wanting that, but I mean, it's out there.
Yeah,
I guess. Yeah, but he's serving that life sentence. Sometimes people turn to cannibalism just out of survival. We know the Donner Party is perhaps the most famous instance of cannibalism. I first heard of the Donner Party in, was it Mrs. Doubtfire? When he is like doing the skeleton. It's definitely... Robin Williams, he's like got like a skeleton room and he's like, hello, Donner Party, Party of Seven or whatever, like, or Donner,
oh,
Party of Seven.
God, what is that from? It's not from Mrs. Doubtfire, I don't think, because I don't remember a skeleton in it, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I think I heard about it first in The Shining.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yes.
So basically in the mid-1800s, a group of pioneers set out to migrate from the Midwest to California. What followed was a series of mistakes and mishaps that led to the party being stranded in the Sierra Nevada mountains for the winter of 1846 to 1847. Some of the migrants resorted to cannibalism to survive, primarily eating the bodies of those who had succumbed to starvation, sickness, or extreme cold. In one instance, though, members of the party murdered two Native American guides who were trying to help them cross the mountain range.
Rude.
That feels a little counterintuitive. Like, don't you need them to get you to the next place?
You would think, and they're just literally helping them. And the Donner Party, the rest of the survivors are like, lunch.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Blech. Okay. In October of 1972, a chartered plane crashed in the Andes Mountains. At the time of the crash, the co-pilot, who was inexperienced, thought that they had reached Quirico, a city in Chile. They had not, though. They were, in fact, 43 miles away, something he would have known if he'd looked at his flight instruments. Thinking they had to descend in order to land at the nearby airport, he decreased altitude and the aircraft struck a mountain. Did we not see the mountain coming? I'm not totally sure. Shearing off both wings and the tail section, on board was an amateur rugby team and some of their family and fans. There were 45 passengers and crew. Three crew members and nine passengers died in the wreck and several more over the course of the next few days due to the frigid temperatures and the severity of their injuries from the crash. For 8 days, authorities searched for the plane, flying over the crash site several times, but they couldn't see it because of large amounts of snow accumulation after the incident. After 8 days of searching, the efforts were called off and everyone aboard was assumed to be dead. For 72 days, the remaining passengers suffered extreme hardships, including exposure, starvation, and an avalanche, which led to the deaths of 13 more passengers. During this time, they made the decision that they needed to eat the deceased in order to survive, and the decision was a difficult one. Many of the passengers were religious and believed it to be a sin to consume another person. Others thought that their deceased friends and family would want them to eat them in order to survive. They knew that the search had been called off because they managed to get a small AM/FM radio to work and they'd heard that on the news. As the weather improved somewhat, two survivors climbed a 15,260-foot mountain peak without gear and hiked for 10 days into Chile to seek help, which is 38 miles. On December 23rd, 1972, 2 months after the crash, the last of the 16 survivors were rescued.
This is just insane to me. Like, you survive a crash, a plane crash. Then you have to face starvation, exposure, an avalanche. And then after all of this, it's like, all right, you see that huge mountain over there? Climb it. Because we're going to, like, and also, I know for a fact that I would have been one of the first to have not survived the. I don't think I would have.
Oh, yeah.
No, I wouldn't have made it half as far or 2 days in.
I simply don't do the outdoors. That's not something I do. Right. I don't think I would survive just simply being outdoors that long.
Survival stories like that are amazing. But I mean, I do think that it is important to talk about that when we're talking about cannibalism specifically, like nobody really wants to resort to cannibalism, but we literally just talked about people who do it as a hobby, I guess, or, you know, intentionally.
Right. Yeah. So obviously there are just crazy situations where your survival might very well depend on it. But now coming back to the Granny Ripper.
Yeah.
She just sort of felt like it. It wasn't even a thing, and I'm not saying that this makes it right or anything, but like Jeffrey Dahmer had this thing where he felt like if he ate pieces of his victims that they were like together forever. And like, I don't know, it was this weird like connection thing for him. But like for her, it was just sort of like, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Like, oh, which,
like,
gosh.
You said, none of it is
right.
Okay. If that's something that, right. Yeah. But.
Hey, you guys, it's us again.
Yay, it's us.
We threw you for a loop on this one. So we know that a lot of you have been asking, like, WTF, where are episodes 1 through 44? And guess what? Now you can have them.
So let's just remember, though, we need you to take a little caution here. We didn't know exactly what we were doing back then. And we started this podcast as just a fun thing to do as sisters. We had no idea that it would grow into this super awesome club with you guys. So what we're saying is the audio wasn't super amazing, but the content is 100% us. Just being us and talking about some true crime with 90s flair.
Okay, so here are the details. You'll be able to access our what we're calling OG episodes in your favorite podcast app through a private and custom RSS feed link. So to grab that, head over to killerqueens.link/OG and snag episodes 1 through 44 today. That's killerqueens.link/OG. So when the authorities spoke with the neighbors, it was often said that Tamara would boast to her friends that she would be famous and popular someday, and she would eventually cause a sensation, but she never would say why. So Marina, the neighbor who told the cops about Tamara's fascination with Chikatilo, also stated that Tamara would sit topless with her back to her window so that her silhouette would be seen by neighbors.
My.
She said that both Tamara and her apartment used to be more attractive, and her husband found Tamara appealing. She said that Tamara would boast about her fluency in both German and English. She also told police that she had let Tamara borrow a hacksaw several years prior that she had never returned. I'm sure that at this point, she's like, you know what?
Keep it. Yes. Keep it. Poor Marina. Gosh, it's like when you know too much. Oh, man.
Well, it's like, you know, we've heard of, you know, people being like, oh, I borrowed my grandmother's car and then murdered somebody and transported their body in that car. You know, just like, golly, you're just doing a nice thing, letting somebody borrow something. You're like, oh, neighbor, you need a saw? I'm sure it's for some kind of household thing. Like,
need an axe, a crowbar. Oh, yeah. I mean, any kind of thing. And sure. Yeah, just doing the neighborly thing. And then you find out what they used it for.
Exactly. After the arrest, Tamara was quick to confess to multiple murders after the evidence had been found. She was glad that she'd been caught, though, she said, and she was more concerned about the publicity than the fact that she was facing the death penalty.
I understand that there's a lot of mental illness at play here, but I don't understand. This is just, it's such a rare sort of case that we're covering.
100%.
It's very different.
Yep.
Tamara's first hearing was on July 29th, 2015, just 2 days after her arrest, and she admitted to killing Valentina. She was very calm in the courtroom. She told Judge Roman Shebatariov that she was guilty and that she deserved punishment. Tamara said that she had been waiting 10 years for the police to show up and arrest her, which I mean, you could go to the police. You don't gotta wait for that. You can go.
Yeah, yeah. Always. There is another option there.
She also told him that by murdering Valentina, she could close this chapter. At one point, she said to the judge, quote, it's stuffy in here. Can I go out? And the judge was like, yeah, okay. So you are boom arrested. You have to be detained for life. And she smiles and claps her hands. Tamara also spoke with the media, telling them that she was haunted by the maniac upstairs, and that was why she had committed these murders. And she also is seen blowing kisses to the press. Something's going, like, I don't.
Yeah.
She was taken back to the apartment with police and showed them step by step how she killed Valentina with a very creepy looking dummy that they use.
Don't we, like, she had already told them all of those things, though? Like, is it necessary for the step-by-step?
I don't know. It was probably, okay, this might not be fair, but it was probably Tamara's idea.
Yeah. She definitely
she's
was
so excited to.
Yeah, soaking up this attention that she's getting.
Yes. The diary was still being reviewed, and it was found that it contained confessions for 10 murders. The police began researching people who had gone missing and crossed them with more body parts found in her neighborhood, and they believed that she murdered closer to 21 people.
Okay, but wait.
All right.
When are they finding all these body parts?
just throughout the years,
I guess.
In that neighborhood, they're finding body parts. And it was never like a, hey, so we're finding like a lot of body parts in your neighborhood. So you might want to like be on the lookout for like strange things happening. Or if you notice somebody that goes missing, please do let us know.
Yeah, I don't really know. It makes you wonder, like, hopefully this is a random neighborhood occurrence, but if it's not, if this is more normal than one would think, I wonder how many is normal? How many body parts is normal to find in someone's neighborhood?
That's what I'm saying. It's like, okay, so now they've cross-referenced all the body parts that they've been finding. There are actually more like 21 people. It's a lot of body parts.
It's a lot of body parts. I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know.
Police also discovered that Tamara's first roommate, Vladimir, had been admitted to the hospital for poisoning, but he had survived. Tamara never admitted to killing her husband, Alexei, but the police believe that she is responsible for his death. I agree. It is also found out that there were no renovations on her apartment when she moved in to Valentina. Her apartment. Like, there, she made it all up. But she had moved in with Valentina to escape the voices in her head. In December of 2015, Tamara was sent to a psychiatric prison in Kazan.
Oh. One of those has to be right. Okay.
The Kazan Psychiatric Hospital of Special Purpose with Intensive Guarding for an assessment. That is a long name.
What a name, yeah.
It was found that she was unfit to stand trial, and Judge Pavel Smirnov ruled that she would spend the rest of her life in a mental institution. She was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, and it was decided that she was a threat to those around her and herself, and that she required, quote, intensive monitoring. Schizophrenia is a mental illness that affects how a person thinks, feels, and behaves. Schizophrenia typically comes on between the ages of 16 and 30, so Tamara likely had been living with this disease for quite some time. Some of the psychotic symptoms of schizophrenia include hallucinations, delusions, thought disorder, and movement disorder. Tamara said that she was haunted by the maniac upstairs, and this suggests that she suffered from delusions and likely hallucinations as well. A source close to the investigation said, quote, "We may never know the extent of the granny's killings. She's either much more stupid or much smarter than she seems."
Wow. Like, I wonder if Alexei was her first murder.
I don't know. That was early 2000s, though.
Yeah, I don't know. Because where else would she have been able to get all these other... Because it seemed like... Because she would have these tenants, because she didn't want to live alone. They'd get in a fight, say, over dishes. And then she'd murder them.
Right. Over who, what to watch on the TV.
Mm-hmm. But Alexei, I wonder if he maybe was going to leave her, or she felt like there was something like that going on, and so she killed him so that he couldn't do that. I don't know.
I don't know.
It's also worth noting that the vast majority of people diagnosed with schizophrenia are absolutely not violent. And in fact, they are more likely to become victims of violent crime. But
right,
there are some situations where that can cause what has happened with Tamara Samsonova. So
yes,
it's rare, like you said, for that to be the cause of her becoming violent. But
right. I like how you gave me all the credit for that when you literally just said it, but thank you. I am glad that you recognize how smart I am. I also think, man, you know, I hate to call it like the perfect situation for her, but nobody suspected her. So that's how she got away with it for so very long.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, the people that were lodging with her or like renting from her, she called them lodgers, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think just difference in terms. I think maybe a lot of them weren't from that area. So people
yes.
in her neighborhood weren't flagged that like, hey, I haven't seen Sergey in, you know, whatever. they may have been like, didn't you have somebody renting from you? Or isn't that a different person that was renting from you? And all she would have to say is, oh yeah, he went back to wherever. She went back to wherever. He moved out. Yeah.
Right.
Now they're traveling and staying somewhere else. And they'd be like, okay, fine. You know, like they don't have any reason not to believe it. And if you're not from that area, if you're reported missing way over there,
mm-hmm.
then the police here aren't going to necessarily know about it.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not like based on the pattern of behavior, like the past, Tamara has a hard time keeping a roommate. So it's like, okay, well, they didn't get along. That's so Tamara.
Yeah. And, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. This is just an outrageous case. It makes me very, very, again, all of it awful and disgusting. And I feel so terrible for all of the victims. I do really think it's so unfair to, because they said that one of the reasons why she might have boiled the hands and head was to make it to where it was really difficult to identify the body. And that worked for her, for a lot of her victims. But it's so unfair for a family of the victim to want to lay their family member to rest and not have all of them to be able to do it.
Cannot imagine. I absolutely cannot imagine.
And there's speculation that she might have disposed of those body parts in a trash can or something, and then it got picked up and it now is in a landfill and now we'll never know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll never find that. Ugh.
Mm-hmm.
I just cannot imagine. It's awful. And just like, for what?
I know it. For what? And again, I cannot stress this enough. She was like, oh, thank God you guys came. I've been waiting for 10 years for you guys to show up. And it's like, but you know where the police department is. Like, go.
Yeah. Hey, you know, obviously there's reasons why she didn't want to. But just what a strange, like, reaction to. Because there is at one point where she, like, tells the judge, she's like, I mean, you do whatever you think you got to do, sweetie. Basically, you know, like, this is up to you. I'm just along for the ride. Like, and clapping mm-hmm. when he says she's going to be detained for life. And, you know, there's definitely...
It seems to me like she had this idea of how all of this was going to pan out. You know, it's almost like she was, how's the right way to say this? Like, you know, she wanted this big, like, oh, they caught me finally. And walking me into the courtroom and having all of this stuff. I don't think that would have been as much of a grand gesture for her if she had turned herself in, kind of thing. And I think she wanted to go out with like a one last
mm-hmm.
whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm.
And she just had that like perfect cover of, oh, I'm staying with this little old lady.
Yeah.
Obviously that's safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like hiding in plain sight kind of thing. I also do want to know what happened to the pharmacist that gave her this medication over the counter when you need a prescription for it. I really hope some action was taken there.
Well, and has this happened before? Because she tried to poison Vladimir.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work. I mean, she poisoned him enough to where he had to go to the hospital, but she didn't kill him. Mm-hmm. What did she poison him with? What did she poison him with, you know? Yeah, I agree. Woof, woof, woof. I don't,
it's a wild one.
Rough stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's it.
That's it. Yeah. I would recommend watching something very funny after this. I don't know. Friends is a great option. If you don't, not into Friends, I don't know. Home Improvements on Disney Plus. That's a really funny show too.
Oh, okay. Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah. There are options here.
Yeah.
But I think you're going to need a palate cleanser because this one's rough. Yeah.
Yeah.
But thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. We love you.
We love you.
Bye.
Bye. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Connect with us on Instagram or Facebook to continue the conversation.
Thanks for listening, and we will meet you back here next week.
Bye.
The theme song for the show is created and composed by Stephen Toby. You can find more of Stephen's work on SoundCloud.
Our logo was created by Sloan Williams of Sophisticated Crayon. You can find more of her work on Etsy. Visit us at killerqueenspodcast.com for merch and other info about the show.